This show furnished by Key Light Counseling Center.
I'm looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program that meets your specific needs. Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by medical addiction specialist Dr. Damon Raskin and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gluss, Concierge Detox LA will design an individualized program to meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712.
Although you'll be receiving valuable advice from our host, please remember this is not therapy. It does not replace a relationship with a qualified mental health professional.
Check 1 2, check 1 2, 1 2, 1.
I'm Dr. G, and here we are with Engaging Minds. As you know, we're here every Sunday between 8 and 9 p.m., and we like to look at our world and our social issues from a psychological point of view. And this is one of my favorite kind of shows that I do. I wanted to explore the artist's journey. And what inspired me is I was watching, you know, the recent award shows that are up. And I kept thinking as a psychologist how inspirational it is to see all these artists win all these awards. But what we don't really see is the process and the work and the tenacity that it takes artists to create what it is that they create. And that's why I wanted to do this show, and that's what inspired me to bring these great guests who are going to come on and help us understand the artist's journey on a much deeper level. So my first guest, actually they're all going to be on together. His name is Alan Barton. He's an LA-based playwright, author, director, teacher, and classical pianist. He's also the owner of the Beverly Hills Playhouse. We have Elizabeth Carlisle. She is an actress, and you may have seen her on The Rich and the Ruthless, and also her great appearances on Hot in Cleveland with Betty White. And then we have Steve Albrezzi. He's a writer, director, producer, and part of faculty at USC. So I want to welcome everyone to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So one of the things we talked about before the show started was a question I get asked a lot, patients that come into my office to see me is, you know, Dr. G, I'm here in LA. I've been here 6 months. I was wondering if you could tell me, how long does it take to be successful? When will I know if I've made it, and what do you think it takes to make it? So that's actually a pretty loaded question. So I'm going to start with our teacher here.
Right.
I'm sure, Alan, you get that question asked all the time from your students. So
yeah, well, you know, if my students hang out for a while, they start to learn not to ask the question.
Yeah.
But I had a young woman who was auditing the class at some point recently, and she came up to me on the sidewalk, and I was just introducing myself, any questions, blah, blah, blah. And she said, okay. She's a very business-minded girl. She had a little check sheet, very type A personality. She said, I'm really good at organization, and I hold these certain jobs, and blah, 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 blah. So just tell me, if I study at the school, how long will it be before I make enough money as an actress that that is the only thing I make, like $50,000 to $100,000 a year? That's my first question. Second question, you know, and I went, stop.
Stop. Yeah, we're going to end that right now.
At the first question. Because I said, now substitute anything else for acting in that question you just asked me. Say, put in violin player. Do you ask me that question? And she just got short-circuited. You know, she couldn't process that. She said, well, but I don't know how to play the violin. And I said, exactly. Do you know how to act? And she said, well, I mean, I've never taken a class before. I mean, this is clearly a beginning student. You know, she had never seriously studied, and she wanted to know when she was going to be making 50 to 100K. And expected an answer, clearly, of... answered in months. I bet if I said it would take a year, she would be disappointed. So, you know, obviously first you need to define success, which I think for most actors is pretty much the money they make is primarily from acting. It doesn't necessarily have to mean a big house, but the money they make from acting. They don't have to do their side jobs. That's probably most actors would say, hey, they would take that in a hot second. My answer to most of them is it's 1 to 5 years just to put together the talent, the knowledge of what your talent can do, and the network of people who trust you and will bring you in on multiple occasions until you start booking jobs regularly. It's 1 to 5 years to build that system. And then it may be more time after that for that system to work in a way that yields more jobs, more money, so that you can look back and say, hey, I've really come a distance. But so I do have an answer, but it's a qualified answer in the sense that you got to know what you're doing and you got to administrate the business side. And you have to have a 1 to 5 year time frame of busting your butt To see any results, I think.
It reminds you of, I've heard patients say, you know, this guy that I have that started doing a startup. It's like you're your own startup. And then the first couple of years, you're not expected to make any money, and it may take 5 years for people to get to know you.
And then any kind of performing arts training, I think you're looking, you know, as soon as you look at other performing arts training or athletes or anything like that, you immediately self-calibrate. You go, oh, it takes years and years and years and years and years, of course, to be a wonderful violinist, to be a professional athlete. But it's tough for them to think that way about their own career.
I think if there's anything else that you can do with your life, then you should do it.
Right, yeah, that's it.
You really have to be that committed. You have to feel like this is the place that I belong, and this is the place my voice belongs.
Do you have that experience, Elizabeth, as an actress?
Yes. Excuse me. I think that everything that you both just said is so spot on correct, and I love the answer that you gave to that student, the girl who was auditing. And I think the violin playing is such a good analogy, because it really takes years, and you can't compare yourself to someone else. Every flower blooms at its own rate. Everyone has the ability to learn and mature at different rates. And it depends on how long have you been studying? What age were you when you started? Getting an agent is difficult. So you can't really put a time limit on it. You just have to be persistent and work your rear end off all the time.
And I think that goes along with what Steve said, is that this sense of it's a lifelong commitment, that you really feel like this is in your soul, that this is something you have to do. You know, I'm thinking that I think you reinvent yourself as an artist constantly. And we talked about this before the show, Steve, that, you know, your great success may come in, you know, 20 years after you've been working or practicing. As a psychologist, I don't see it much different in my profession. It may take 10 years to get your PhD. Then you have to intern. And then there are really no guarantees. You're kind of out there trying to figure it out yourself. So I think people go through different phases of their own career.
Yeah, sure. And then actors have, I think, an essential quality that may be more, like you say, it blossoms later. You know, I've taught many actors in their 20s, you know, one who I can think of where I said, you just need to hang on until you're a bit older.
And you grow into your face.
Yeah, like the style, her innate maturity was more suitable to older parts. And she wasn't going to get those parts in her 20s because she wasn't going to get them.
But
and to her credit, she hung out. And now she's booking. Like, you've seen this young woman on TV a lot. And she runs it well. And she put in the time. And then it all started to line up. So you never know when there are those factors as well.
I think one thing that is different that I've seen with artists, you know, if you become a doctor or a psychologist or an attorney, there is a path. You have to do a certain amount of hours. You have to get your license. You have to do, you know, it's a little more concrete. I find with artists, it's much more difficult to figure out what path is. People will ask me all the time, what do you think the right choice is that I should make? So I'm wondering, as artists, all of you, how do you answer that to someone, like your students or for yourself? How do you pick that right path?
Well, I think that we were talking about defining success before, and I think success means different things to different people. And I know it's meant different things to me at different points in my career. So in the very beginning, I think success is kind of dictated by the outside world. And we think that it has everything to do with kind of notoriety and some kind of remuneration. And then after a while, I think it becomes, can I work consistently and with good people? And is the work getting richer? You know, so, the idea of success has changed for me over and over and over. Has it for you?
Yeah, sure. I've talked about, yeah, I'm not shy. No one has to follow me along, but I'll admit that I'm going to be 50 this year. So there are certain things, you know, I had my 25th college reunion a couple of years ago. So there are these markers that start to hit. 25 years of my adult life. What have I achieved? Blah, blah, blah. 50. What does it all mean? And I know that for me, the game has changed, and I've grown to really enjoy, you know, there's that saying, someone smart said, you know, life is what happens while you're making plans.
Right.
And suddenly I looked around and I said, oh, I'm a teacher. I teach and run this school, which I greatly enjoy. I get up to work, go to work every day, happy to do so. And that's a good thing. A lot of people don't. I got three young kids. I get to spend a lot of time with them. A lot of people don't.
And you talk about the thing you love every day.
Yeah, exactly. I love what I do every day, and I think I get to have an impact, and I'm able to do things as a writer and bring things into existence in a certain way that I would never trade. Even though early on, of course, like what Steve says, everyone thinks of, you know, the fame marker and the money marker.
And what you're saying is, are you saying that it becomes a little bit, a lot more internal as you get older? Because that's what I find too, is that.
I think you just, you know, maybe the ambition engine slows after a while, you know, where you, right. You just realize there are other things that can make you happy and content other than fame and money. But
like
in
you
Los Angeles.
Turn around one day and go like, oh, I'm a teacher. I guess I've been teaching for 20
years. I've
been
teaching and I'm good at it and I really enjoy it. And right. A bunch of people come to see me when I teach. So, okay, that's, look, you know. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
After a while, I think the purpose in the work too, you know.
Yeah.
What exactly are you putting your voice behind? You know, what are you putting out there? I look at it as I want to sit at the table and be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And that for me as an artist is really kind of defines the way I go about the work. You know, I want to talk about the things that are important to me.
Things that feel relevant.
But to your question originally, I think the way in is just the way that keeps you in. In a certain way you were asking, what's the road? What road do I take? And I'm sort of like, whatever road keeps you in. Keeps you involved.
I'm thinking of a patient, and maybe Elizabeth can answer this too, who is an actor, and he's someone who's come to it later in life, and he's measuring a lot of his success based on how many parts he gets. And I wonder if that's a very dangerous place to put yourself, because it does put you, you know, your success is dependent on outside people. And the advice I keep giving him is just keep doing it, because it sounds like it's something you love to do.
Yes, I agree. That's good advice for him. And I personally, for me, that would be a dangerous way to measure my success. I actually came to acting a little bit later as well. I didn't come to Los Angeles until I was in my mid-20s. Yeah. Ooh. And I pretty much had zero acting training when I came here. Yeah.
Elizabeth, I want to hear more about your zero acting. Let me introduce you to Alan. Yeah. Alan teaches.
I had a student who turned 25 who's
told me. If you want a show written about your life, you know, we have over here, we have Steve. But we're going to take a break after the commercial. We'll talk more about this. I want to remind our listeners, if you want to call in, our number is 1-800-222-5222.
What happened? You used to go hours without visiting the bathroom. Now it seems like you're constantly getting up to pee, and you're even getting up at night to go. This is not okay. Listen, the makers of Super Beta Prostate, the number one prostate formula, are introducing a new wonder pill, Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced, with three key ingredients that are great for your prostate. It's like taking three prostate supplements in one. To celebrate, we're sending free bottles to men who want to cut down on bathroom trips. Yes, your first 30-day supply is free. Pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-255-3377. Early research suggests that an ingredient in P3 Advanced may help support a normal prostate size. Combine that with a reduction in urges to pee, and you have a formula you'd be crazy not to try. Get P3 Advanced free. Call 1-800-255-3377. 1-800-255-3377. 1-800-255-3377. What happened? You used to go hours without visiting the bathroom. Now it seems like you're constantly getting up to pee, and you're even getting up at night to go. This is not okay. Listen, the makers of Super Beta Prostate, the number one prostate formula, are introducing a new wonder pill, Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced, with three key ingredients that are great for your prostate. It's like taking three prostate supplements in one. To celebrate, we're sending free bottles to men who want to cut down on bathroom trips. Yes, your first 30-day supply is free. Pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-255-3377. Early research suggests that an ingredient in P3 Advanced may help support a normal prostate size. Combine that with a reduction in urges to pee, and you have a formula you'd be crazy not to try. Get P3 Advanced free. Call 1-800-255-3377. 1-800-255-3377. 1-800-255-3377.
Hi everyone, Lou Manfredini here with another House Smarts Minute. The typical person can be found inside of their home or office space at least 90% of their time. Therefore, it's imperative that harmful pollutants are removed regularly. You can properly remove mold, allergen, dust mites, and light stains from your carpets using a steamer. The heat will kill dust mites and other organic bugs that you don't want in your carpets. More information at HouseSmartsTV.com.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program that meets your specific needs? Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by medical addiction specialist Dr. Damon Raskin and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gluss, Concierge Detox LA will design an individualized program to meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712.
Welcome back to Engaging Minds with your host, Dr. Howard Gluss, licensed clinical psychologist.
I'm Dr. G, and we're back with the show. And before we get back to Elizabeth, I wanted to mention that, you know, we did a show recently on the End of Life Option Act here in California, and we got a lot of response to it, people wanting to find out more information about it. And our sponsor, Mid Valley Hospice Care, is one of the hospice cares that does support the End of Life Option Act. So if you're looking to get more information, please contact Mid Valley Hospice Care at 818-386-2600. That's 818-386-2600. And they'll all answer all the necessary questions you have. So, Elizabeth, before the break, we found out that you sort of fell into acting a little bit later on in life, in your 20s.
Yes.
Way later. So tell us a little bit about your journey.
I'd studied some acting in college. I didn't think I was any good, so I quit. And then I had the opportunity to audition for a Chris Rock film. I was living in Maryland at the time, and I got the part. It was really dumb luck, and I was able to join the Screen Actors Guild. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to move to L.A. and act. I moved out here, I really didn't know how to act. So I immediately studied, you know, got very serious about it. But it takes a long time. If I had moved here and expected to have a theatrical agent within 6 months, and I'm a series regular and already, you know, in these movies, I would be a mess. More of a mess than I already am.
Let's be honest here.
But you know,
as someone who knows you, but
there's ups and downs. I think that it's, for me, it would be not healthy to base my success on how many bookings I've had. I've had years when I've had a lot of bookings. I've had years when it's been really dry, and I try to take it. With each project I book, I try to learn something new and stretch myself more. And I think that is what makes me personally a better artist and more confident. And when you have confidence, you'll book more work.
You know, I was thinking of that. I read, sort of to segue, I read an article this week that Selena Gomez entered treatment because of issues of depression and anxiety. And she said it was related to what was going on in her life personally, but really emphasized what was going on professionally. And I know, as someone working in mental health, a lot of artists struggle with mental health issues. So I was wondering, you know, your own experience with that, or both our gentlemen here, their personal experience or dealing with students that come in with these issues.
Well, I think it's tough to say what the chicken or the egg is there, you know,
okay.
Because I think, you know, people in show business talk about themselves. So if someone like Selena Gomez is going to go and get therapy, she might talk about it, and you know about it, and you start talking about it on your radio show. If your kid's school teacher is suffering from depression, you probably don't know about it and what they may or may not be doing to help themselves with it. So I think part of it is that the lens that we're looking at showbiz through enhances that kind of chatter. You know, people in the entertainment business talk about themselves. They talk about their process. It's a popular thing to do. So part of me is like, is there a greater incidence of mental health issues in the entertainment business? Or is it just the lens on that more focused? Or does the business attract those who may be susceptible to those issues? But either way, what I try to do with students or friends or whomever who might be having that issue is to try to separate them, because everyone's got a job to do. You know, you go to a set, there's 50 to 100 people on a set. They all got a job to do, and you don't know what the mental state of all those people is, whether they're happy, whether they're in the middle of a divorce or some sort of trauma. And you still have a job to do. And so I try to focus people on, you got to do your job. and sanity is a ancillary benefit. I'll be glad to talk to you.
I mean, a lot of us do our jobs and don't feel very safe while we're
doing. Like when did sanity become something that everyone gets to experience, and ongoing happiness? You know, I think a lot of people...
You have to be functional.
You have to be functional, yes. Right. And that's what I try to instill in the students is, like, you have to be functional. You have to be a professional. You have to show up on time. There are things you need to do to function well as an actor, and you can do that and do a good job and be unhappy the entire time and insecure the entire time, and no one will necessarily know the better. So I try to separate the notion that you must be sane and happy in order to act well.
Yeah, I think a lot of times there's a fine line, maybe even for younger actors, between training as an actor and what they're taught to do and therapy, that sometimes the acting training becomes therapy.
Yeah, sure, when acting training is portrayed in TV shows or whatever, right. it normally is portrayed with a slightly negative, kind of sardonic, ha-ha, cheap therapy.
No, I was thinking more about...
And I think working on an artist, you are, to a certain degree, working on the person.
Right.
And there's a natural bleed over to that area. I try to be extremely judicious myself about straying into that area. I don't consider that my job.
Right.
But it is part of it.
Steve, I was wondering, I also read a statistic recently that 80% of writers tend to be struggling with depression. And that a lot of times the writing itself, the creative process of writing, is a tool to help them with depression. I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that.
You know, sometimes I think that writing is like an archaeological dig, you know, and you go in searching for one thing and you find kind of pieces of your own puzzle in there, and it's very revealing, and that's actually a good thing. I don't think of that as a bad thing. And we could talk about that as a certain kind of therapy, and I also think acting is revelation to some degree, and to know thyself, you know, and to actually be doing work on yourself, and to be able to access different facets of your emotional life, your physical life. That's part of what the work is. And I think it can be done in a disciplined way, and intelligent choices can be made. But it's a craft. It's something that somebody has to do over a period of time, really.
And consistently.
And consistently.
Mm-hmm. So if you're on a set, as Elizabeth will tell us, you have to do the same thing over and over again. I think you three bring up great points. That even though you have to dig deep into your soul, if there are issues, I believe, that comes up that it's difficult for you to deal with, maybe that's time to see someone like myself to help you work through that. But that's not necessarily, part of the craft, let's say, of acting.
Yeah, but, I mean, I like to think that the emotional register.
Do I got it right?
That an actor is playing an emotional register, just like, right. You know, I'm a pianist. I play a keyboard, but I'm not the piano. I play it. It's just that the actor is playing the emotional instrument that is within themselves. And I think that with time, with training, with experience, you learn to do that in a way that doesn't necessarily suck you into your own issues or make you think that your own issues are now a block towards a certain kind of acting or being able to do it well. So it's kind of a learning to play the instrument. It's just that the instrument happens to be you.
I think that's a great analogy. So one of the questions I have that I got an email from, this is stuff I've seen many times from different artists, also working with some visual artists. When they're dealing with issues of drug or alcohol rehabilitation, the fear is that if I become sober, I won't be able to create because I create from those from a place of being inebriated, let's say. And there is a tremendous fear that, again, I'm repeating myself, if I become sober, I'm going to lose my creativity. So I'm going to throw that out to our audience, and we have a minute and a half to cover it, but we're going to have other segments. So any thoughts about that?
It's a lie.
Okay.
You know, I think it's a lie they tell themselves.
So they can keep doing what they're
absolutely.
Doing?
Absolutely.
Elizabeth, any thoughts on that?
Typically when someone has an addiction problem, it's to cover up emotions that are too painful for them to feel. Well, imagine how much more open they'll be when they're sober and they can actually feel those feelings and use them. So I think it's a crutch.
Yeah, but those feelings can be terrifying to get connected to, but actually really important. You know what, Steve? We're going to have to break for break, but we're going to start with you when we get back. I'm Dr. G. If you have any questions, you can also email me at drhowardgluss@live.com.
Are you wondering how to improve your relationships and your life? Are you curious if we've all been through what you're experiencing? Well, take a seat on the couch with Dr. Leanna and me, Eric Scott Smith, Fridays at midnight, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
February is Heart Health Month, so Quantum Nutrition Labs is featuring two key support agents for promoting cardiovascular and circulatory health. Quantum Delta Tocotrienol and Quantum Resveratrol. Buy two bottles and get the third one free. And get a free copy of the Biofield Diet. Now is the time to commit to making your heart health a priority year-round. Call 888-588-7578. That's 888-588-7578. Or visit us online at qnlabs.com. That's qnlabs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD, host of Healthline. Tune in to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Our product line, Quantum Nutrition Labs, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update, I'm Steve Cumming. The 2018 National Football League season is in the books, and KABC's Jim Roop was there.
The most yards ever in a Super Bowl, the second most points ever scored in a Super Bowl, and the Philadelphia Eagles scored more of them to win their first world championship ever. The Philadelphia Eagles are the champions of football, beating the New England Patriots 41-33 in a sold-out Minneapolis U.S. Bank Stadium.
For the Eagles, who previously lost the Super Bowl in 1981 and 2005, the win capped a remarkable late-season run that many considered unthinkable when starting quarterback Carson Wentz suffered a season-ending injury in December. KABC SoCal weather mostly clear this evening and areas of fog overnight with lows in the 50s. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
You've heard me talk about attorney Sweet James Bergner. If you're hurt or you're injured in any kind of accident, don't go at this alone. Call the one to trust, the People's Attorney of Southern California, Sweet James Bergner. 800-881-2021 or go to sweetjames.com.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program that meets your specific needs? Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by medical addiction specialist Dr. Damon Raskin and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gluss, Concierge Detox LA will design an individualized program to meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712.
Welcome back to Engaging Minds with your host, Dr. Howard Gluss, licensed clinical psychologist.
I'm Dr. G, and we are back on the show. And one of the things I want our audience to hear, that everyone across the panel is saying, that we have to separate what goes on creatively and what goes on personally. And if our personal lives are getting in the way of our creativity, we have to take responsibility for it and do something about it. That's the message I'm getting from you guys. It's a craft, whether you're writing, acting, teaching. You have to learn your profession, just like if you were, as Alan had said at the break, a concert pianist or a truck driver.
And you wouldn't want either of those people to be drunk.
I hope not.
It's a joke. It's a bad joke when you say, well, you're out drinking. You're like, well, I drive a little better when I'm tipsy. Everyone goes, ha ha ha. Are you okay? Are you okay to go? You know, it's, you wouldn't think of it, but yet, in the arts, again, it can be mythologized.
Or, and actually, Elizabeth,
I'm better when I'm drunk. When I'm high. I'm more creative.
It gives me an excuse to.
Have you ever worked?
Go ahead.
I don't think I've ever worked with anybody. I don't think in 30 years I've ever worked with anybody that was either high or drunk.
I had recently a reading, not recently, a year and a half ago or something, but a reading of a play I was working on, and the one of the actors came in drunk. Yeah. And I almost just got up and replaced him, but I was unfortunately too shy. And when I look back on it, I sure just got up and said, listen, take off. I'll read in for you.
You're responsible to so ahead, many people Steve. When you're doing work.
Yeah.
You know, so many other people are relying on you.
Yeah.
That there really is no room for it.
And Elizabeth brought up a good point I want at our break that I want our audience to hear, that a lot of it is romanticized, that this thought that artists are always drunk on the set and mm-hmm. because you hear of those cases because they're famous people, basically.
With Alan's lens.
Comment too.
Yes, with what we see through the Hollywood lens.
So, question. Did you have any more thoughts on that, Steve, before we jump off onto another subject?
No, I'm thinking of Peter O'Toole, though, while we're talking yes. about this, though.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, when O'Toole and Harris, right, you know. You know, so the stories about Burton.
Oh, right. Or Elizabeth Taylor.
The stories of the greats but in a way that's part of the romanticizing of it. It's like, look at those guys. Look at the time they had.
Do you think it was a different time or do you think,
Well, I think it was more tolerated.
It was more tolerated.
But, you know, you can't teach from that standpoint. You can't look at that and model that behavior. We can admire Peter O'Toole for a lot of things, but maybe not that.
So one of the exactly, I mean, you really admire him for. He's known for being a great actor, not necessarily his issues with alcohol.
Not the means by which he got those performances, whether drunk or not drunk. You know.
So in Hollywood, I was going to ask Elizabeth this. You know, we're hearing about all these issues of, you know, gender equality, diversity, overcoming sexual harassment. So I was going to ask you as an actress or your experience or thoughts around this, and then I'm going to bring it out to our gentlemen because I was also thinking our creative process is part of our, you know, we're products of our environment, and the environment seems to be changing.
Yes, thank goodness. There have been a lot of sexual harassment allegations coming out, and I think that I've been pretty lucky thus far that I have not ever really been a victim of any of that sort of thing. Although I think that sometimes sexual harassment can happen and we're not aware of it when it's happening. And then maybe afterwards we think, hey, that was an inappropriate thing that just happened. And you're so shocked in the moment that you don't really know what to say or how to handle it. And I also think that it's so deeply ingrained in our society that sometimes the people doing the harassment don't know they're doing it. It's just a lot of change is going to have to happen. And I think that there are these wonderful catalysts starting, but it's going to take a while. But I would love to see more women in Hollywood. I would like to see more roles for women. I would like to see more women directors and writers. And I think it's going to happen.
Do you think that, By talking about this, one of my thoughts is it would create more freedom and maybe more creativity for, let's say, like women to be able to do more and maybe have less of a concern around issues like sexual harassment. We're just making something conscious. I think that we're starting to talk about and start a dialogue. And that's to me one of the most important things that now there's a dialogue.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen. You know, sunlight is a great disinfectant, right? So, so I think all the metrics are moving in the right direction. You know, it's just going to take probably more time. And there are, you know, people who grew up in different eras. They have different schools of how they were brought up, what was acceptable, what game is played. Even if, the person sort of making the aggressive move thinks it's charming or that's how the game is played. I think there's just much greater awareness of it. You know, my concern, if there is one, is only about due process. You know, when you have these moments where it feels like there's been this very sudden rush since the Harvey Weinstein story came out. And look, the Times had that story 10 years ago and killed it. So there's this rush of, I have a brother who works in the entertainment field in New York. He calls it retroactive moral enlightenment, where suddenly our current awareness of what's cool or not cool is now applied retroactively to a million different situations. And I think there's a danger in that in terms of due process. You know, people are putting stories up on the web like, hey, why don't you tell them what happened in that garage, Mr. So-and-so? And the guy is now accused. And it's like accusation equals evidence equals indictment, trial, sentencing, conviction and sentencing, all on the web. And that is frightening. Now, I know a lot of people would say, well, you know what? It was frightening on our end for many years. And
yeah,
we didn't have any
make it right.
We didn't have any way of doing it. And now it's going to be frightening on their end. And they feel that that's, in a way, a manner of justice. I just am concerned about that issue.
As a female, I agree with you. We do need due process. Absolutely. There's a lot of jumping the gun here.
You know, I think it's good that Hollywood is talking about it, and it's coming to the fore right now. But I think it also reflects what's been going on in the culture for many, many years. And hopefully it will not just be in Hollywood. It will be across the board.
Yeah, well, that's the same lens metaphor we're using. You know, Hollywood's been a cesspool of this activity, but you know, show me a hospital where it isn't happening. Show us Washington, D.C.
Exactly, yeah.
Show us any field where this kind of, where people can't tell this.
Politics.
Politics, of course. Washington and L.A. are identical in that regard. So, so I think the metrics are moving in the right direction. It's going to take some time, and I think,
You know, I'm agreeing with all of you. I think I read an article, it was Elton John actually that came out and talked about the issue of due process, that he felt it was, this was my understanding of it. He felt it was great that this was happening, but, you know, we have to be a little bit careful because we're also lumping in a lot of different issues that are happening with people to different degrees into one issue. But, you know, that happens a lot.
Yeah, I was talking to someone. I said, you've got to be careful that it's really about,
right,
you know, a serial or something we can really all look at and go like, that is bad behavior. But so there's stuff that I know is being swept up in this that is what I call consensual but regretted.
Right.
You know, so I don't think hashtag consensual but regretted should be part of this. You know, that's something else. You know,
I think it's going to find some sort of equilibrium where it's going to become part of.
I hope so.
I hope so.
But, you know, but there's that story. I mean, they just fired that Met opera director. Did you read about that? John Copley? I think, for making a single clearly joking remark, you know, and he was fired on the spot. On one report, this is a very famous director, you know, and that kind of thing, I think, upsets everybody and makes us think, whoa, 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 what's going on here?
Yeah, it's also what Elizabeth was saying about generational. I know, having worked with some actors that are, you know, older actors, that they're, you know, it's just a very different concept, and this is how they were conditioned and socialized. So, and, you know, I think we have to put everything in perspective.
Yeah.
But the idea that it's being talked about is great. I wanted to ask you guys, one of the things I've observed, because I'm going to learn something from you, I've seen, this is just anecdotal, but working with artists, it seems like there's a group of people that tend to sort of destroy their success when they become successful rather than on the road to success, that the success is actually frightening for them. And I have some thoughts about it, but I'm wondering if you've ever encountered something like that or any thoughts around that, that once they get their success, a lot of self-destructive behavior seems to come up.
Well, I think on the internal side, it's, I think the cliche, this is one where you're the more professional, but I would say it's in some way they probably feel they don't deserve it. And then try either covertly or overtly to sabotage it so that they can undo it. I think from an external place, it's that they can't handle the pressures of being in that position. The expectations, the money, people rely on you. There's a lot of things that happen when you get put in that position, and I think some people aren't, I think it's a function of training and maturity. You got to be in a certain position to be able to handle what's coming to you.
But maybe that's true with every profession.
Sure, but I think because of the fame, money thing that happens in Hollywood, where, you know, you're really under a quite literally a microscope. If the fame thing happens in particular, I think that can be a very upsetting, disorienting thing for someone when it happens.
There's another side of this, I think. I think artists, some of us get into it because there's such a thrill in doing the work. You know, it's like walking in the dark. But it's like being a slalom skier, you know, and every time you approach an obstacle, you have to adjust, you know, you have to deal with it. And you go over moguls, and it's thrilling to do. And so as you go higher and higher on the mountain, maybe you want to go higher and faster, and you keep wanting to go higher
and faster.
That's a great
point.
And it drives them into places where maybe they shouldn't be going.
And, you know, a lot of times that's where sort of the drugs and alcohol come in, because that allows you to stay high. There is that you need that you want to always be in that thrill place, let's say.
Yeah.
And the entertainment industry can allow that to happen. So that goes along with the thought, Elizabeth, that we once talked about, is you got to have a hobby.
You got to have a hobby.
Yeah.
I mean, you really have to have a life.
Your career needs to be your hobby.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know,
got to have a life outside of this.
having kids, and I started fairly late. I started when I was 40, but that's a great anti-ego, anti-narcissism medicine, because no matter what is going on in your head, you're up early feeding them, getting them to school, dealing with them, making sure they're okay. There's a whole checklist of things you got to do that you're going to do, whether you're sick, high, feeling low, feeling whatever. And it's a great anti-narcissism medicine. So have children, everyone.
Have children. or at least get a dog or a cat, right?
Or a few cats.
Something that you have to care about outside yourself.
I think
certainly.
That's great, actually, for...
So you say cats, but it's no joke.
Right.
You know, something that you have to be responsible to outside yourself.
Yeah, I think people do better when they have strong roots already established, you know, and then success comes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we're going to take a break, but I do want to say something. You know, as you may have heard, we're running a commercial about Concierge Detox LA. I'll talk to you about it more after the commercial. I'm Dr. G. If you want to call in, it's 1-800-222-5222.
Met someone. You hear it a lot from people on Match, because more people have met their someone on Match than any other dating app. Everyone wants to find that meaningful connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates too. Now here's a free offer for our listeners. Go to match.com/fresh for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search, view photos, and connect. This free offer is found at match.com/fresh. That's match.com/fresh. Match.com/fresh.
Have you ever worked at a place where they didn't want you talking about your salary? Actually, have you ever worked anywhere where they did? Unlikely. But don't you have a right to know? If only there were a simple solution. Well, now there is.
How we find jobs has changed. On Indeed.com, our company reviews give you the inside track on thousands of companies. You can research salaries, benefits, company cultures, and more. All on Indeed.com. Search for greatness. Search Indeed, the world's number one job site. Indeed is the world's number one job site according to Comscore total visits.
Message and data rates may apply.
Guys, this may be the last time you ever have to think about hair loss. Because I'm telling you, Bosley is the real deal. They're giving men their hair back permanently. Their real hair. All it takes to get started on the hair gain train is a single text message. You'll get an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card when you text FUN to 85850. Check them out now. Bosley will show you for free how great your hair could look. Dude, this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're America's number one hair restoration expert, ahead of the curve with the latest technology. And the best part, Bosley's solution is permanent. You're going to love what they'll do for your hair. So drop what you're doing long enough to send a text. Get your free information kit and gift card for $250 off by texting FUN to 85850. Don't forget, that's FUN. To 85850.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program that meets your specific needs? Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by medical addiction specialist Dr. Damon Raskin and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gluss, Concierge Detox LA will design an individualized program to meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712.
Welcome back to Engaging Minds with your host, Dr. Howard Gluss, licensed clinical psychologist.
I am Dr. G, and we're back on the air. As I started to tell you, you just heard a commercial for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation. It's a company that myself and Dr. Damon Raskin, who's an addiction specialist, have started. And what motivated us and inspired us to do it is we've both worked in rehab quite a bit, and we found that sometimes there were individuals who wanted the service in the privacy of their own home and also geared towards their own personal interests. So what we've done is we work with individuals to create a program that will work for you. And specifically, we've worked with artists this way, that sometimes artists who are dealing with issues of alcohol and drug addiction may want something that's a little more personalized, a little bit more creative, that can actually integrate some of their own work into the rehabilitation process, that it's not something that's separate. So they learn how to be creative from a more healthy and a more solid place. So that was part of what inspired us. At the break, I want to share this with our audience. Steve had a great question for me. So Steve, can you share it with us?
Well, I just have thought of psychotherapy, and I just wanted to clarify. I've always thought of it as a very positive personal growth mechanism. Like that, there are many people that go to therapy because there's a particular point in their lives where they meet obstacles or whatever, and they need some support in negotiating them and able to understand that moment in time better. And especially when we talk about artists, I mean, I'm a writer, and there are times where it pours out of me, and there are times where I stare at the blank page, you know, and I'm stuck. And it's good to be able to go and talk about those issues productively with somebody else, and maybe what's going on in your life. I wouldn't want to think that I'm mired in quicksand in those moments.
I think you bring up a really good point. I think there are different kinds of therapy for different kinds of issues. And a lot of times people will initially come in because there's a crisis. But once the crisis is settled, they may find that they use the hour in therapy or the 50 minutes in therapy as a creative process. So, a lot of times therapists can be trained in different ways to help bring out certain, to help deal with crises, and then to pull back and try to help someone, get deeper into their creative process or deal with writer's block.
So it's not always about maladaptive.
No, not at all.
I just wanted to clarify.
No,
not all artists go to therapy because they're,
Actually, what I usually tell people is, you know, once the crisis is over, that's actually when the therapy starts. And it can be, for some people, it can be extremely valuable, extremely valuable process. But I want to go around. We'll start with you since we're talking to Steve. Tell us a little, just quickly, a project that you're working on, something that's inspiring you, and also if our audience wanted to find out more about your work, how could they do so?
Well, they can go to stevealbrezzi.com, and they can read about my work. And I guess the most recent project actually was 5 years in the making. It's a little film called Commencement that Lionsgate and Indigen Pictures released in May this past year. And it's out there digitally now. And it was, in a way, a transformational moment in my life in that I went back and decided I was going to make little independent films, raise the money myself. I wrote the film in 3.5 weeks, and we made it in 12 days, and we ended up actually getting distribution. And it opened a new way of looking at the work, you know, so rather than always hitchhiking as a writer-director in Hollywood, that this was being able to kind of take the bull by the horns and make the work.
That's really exciting. You know, I want to talk to – we have a call coming in, Sean from Los Angeles. I want to take the call and make sure there's time for both Alan and Elizabeth to tell us a little bit about themselves. But Sean, this is Dr. Gluss. He wonders if hypnotherapy is viable. Are you – I guess that question's for me. Sean? Okay. Well, I'm going to answer. I'm not sure if he can hear me or not.
I'm here.
It's not something I personally do, so I can't really, I don't have a lot of personal experience with it, but a lot of times I've had patients ask me about it. I think sometimes the therapy that I do is much more in depth and takes a little bit longer. Sometimes people go to hypnotherapy as a way to find an instant cure for something, you know. And I don't know if you know, sometimes I just think that you have to look at the long haul, the long road in dealing with certain issues. So I don't know if that answers your question directly. It's just something I just don't have a lot of experience with.
Okay. Yeah, it was just one of those things where I came across it recently, and the way it was presented to me was multiple sessions that would help you, you know, deal with whatever it is you are going through and or to treat you. And it wouldn't be like a one, it wouldn't be like a one session thing. It would be over the course of maybe 2-3 months. I don't know if you have any.
Well, the one thing I can tell you is, you know, make sure whoever you're working with is trained well. And there are different organizations that, people get associated with to make their credentials. So you could make sure the person who you're talking to is credentialed. That's
certified. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Sean, thank you very much for calling in. And, you know what? I'm going to relate that question a little bit to what we're going through. The sense sometimes that, you know, I've had patients come to me and say, you know, I'm using crystal meth. I have 7 sessions on my therapy. How long do you think it'll take to cure? And I go 7 to 10 years, and they laugh, and I go,
right.
No, actually, I'm being really serious because you have to change everything about your life. So that's, I think the message we're trying to give to people here too is that, if you're going to be an artist, it's a lifelong career. I mean, and dealing with issues constantly.
Yeah, evolving. You're dealing with your own issues, the personal issues, the career issues, and managing all that.
So,
but, as does everybody.
Right. With the tour, I want to make sure we get to talk to you. So, if people wanted to find out more about the Beverly Hills Playhouse, how
could
they
do
so?
Yeah, you can just go to the website, bhplayhouse.com, and, we're one of Los Angeles's oldest and sort of most renowned acting schools,
And you offer classes on all different levels, right?
Yeah, classes on all different levels. I teach the advanced level, but we take all comers. So that's a lot of where my energy is based, day in, day out. And I teach there, but I'm also a playwright, and I've been working on a new play, a commissioned piece for the last couple, 2.5 years.
Do you want to share what it is?
Or? Yeah, it's called Circling, and, it's a play, it's a true story about a doctor who was, dealing with cancer. And on his way out, when it became terminal, decided to build his own casket for cremation, which you'd think, wow, that's a really morbid topic. But what's interesting is that this very type A, aggressive, very successful cardiothoracic surgeon really had never had a friendship that were like the one he developed with the guy who built this casket for him. And so it's a story about that friendship and how it developed and what this did with the family, because the family, of course, is like, what are you doing? And this guy, his name is Jeffrey Peeler, became the guy to talk to about dying for about 15 minutes in his moment there. And the New York Times wrote it up as a human interest story. Producer saw that. Producer knew me, commissioned me to write the play about it. He got the life rights. So it's a very interesting true story. And we've been working on it and shaping it for a while. And now we're at a moment where we have some very talented people behind it. A director named Jenny Sullivan and an actor named Gregory Harrison, and we're trying to get it into the 2018-19 season.
That was exactly
at one of the good theaters in Southern California coming up. So we're working pretty hard on trying to make that happen.
That's very exciting. And Elizabeth, what's going on in your life?
So I am a series regular on a show on the Urban Movie Channel called The Rich and the Ruthless, which is written and directed by Victoria Rowell. And we just finished shooting season 2, which should be airing this spring. But you can check out season 1 on the Urban Movie Channel. And I'm going to be shooting an independent film this month, which I'm really excited about, called Vendetta, that deals with addiction and alcoholism. So that's will be very exciting, and it's going to you know, like we're talking about, stretch me as an actor and take me to, you know, just the evolution of an actor. So we'll be constantly evolving here.
And you know, we have 2 minutes left, and I'd like to ask this at the end, because sometimes people have something they really wanted to share with our audience or some sort of burning issues. So I'm just going to throw it out there. Is there something, Steve, that a final thought that you'd like to share with us?
You know, there was, at the end of the 19th century, there was an artist in upstate New York named Robert Jacobs that said, the object is not to make art, it's to live a life that makes art inevitable. And somehow I think the great art is is what we make our lives into. And that becomes the balance that allows you to kind of make the work that you want to make and find the purpose that moves you forward.
And Alan, how about yourself?
I would tell my aspiring actor friends to take social media applications off of your phone.
Okay.
That's my very specific piece of advice. Because I think a lot of people's attentions are getting sucked into that. And I'm not saying quit social media because there's a business function and I understand it, or promotional function. But if you get it off your phone, I think you'll find your day goes by better, more even keel, and you'll have thoughts about things you can do and achieve that are different.
And Elizabeth, we have a few seconds left.
Take care of yourself. Be self-compassionate. Let's try not to judge other people. And please neuter and spay your pets.
Yes, I was going to say that. So one of the things I wanted to thank you all for coming on the show. I thought it was a great discussion. What I wanted our audience to hear is just the tip of the iceberg around the complexities of what an artist face. And so when you see them accepting that Academy Award, you know one thing, that there's been quite a road that they've had to deal with. A lot of ups, a lot of downs, but in the end, pretty exciting and possibly really personal for them. I'm Dr. G. We'll be back next week. If you want to email me with any questions, it's Dr. Howard Gluss at live.com.
This show furnished by Key Light Counseling Center.